talk about a few Rashi's in the beginning and maybe another Rashi in the middle of the Parsha. So here's an interesting Rashi in the very beginning. Ela Kruei Haida. So these were the Nesiim who assisted Moshe in the counting, and of course the Nesiim is the drama of Sefer Bamidbar, the rise and fall of the Nesiim. The Nesiim are the assistants of Moshe, they are supporting their march in the beginning. Of course, they turn a little sour in Parsha Shlach, where they become the Meraglim, and there are different Nesiim a little bit later, so there's many different Nesiim moving their way through Sefer Bamidbar. So here we encounter a name we haven't seen before, the Keruoi Ha'eda. They're being called by the Eda. So what does Keruoi Ha'eda mean? So Keruoi Ha'eda means you're called for a task, you're called for a function. For example, the Ramban in Parshas Emor says, why is a Yantav called Mikra Kodesh? So your thing is a Mikra Kodesh because we call it holy, we call it a different day. Ramban says, no, that the people are called to some different place. We're called to Shul, we're called to the Beis Knesses, we're called to a day of spirituality. So to be called, as we say, a calling. You have a calling to something different. So the Keruoi Ha'eda are not the people that call the people, that call the congregation, that call the population. They're being called by the population for some task, for some leadership role, for some mission. Okay, that's pretty standard. That appears in many Rishonim. Throughout the Torah, we have this phrase, Keruoi Ha'eda, the Parsha Shlach. This is just the first encounter. But Rashi in Parshas Bamidbar has one word that he has that changes the complexion a little bit. Hanikrayim l'chol davar chashiva shebeida. They weren't just called for this task, but they were called for many tasks before, and many missions before, and many responsibilities before, which we didn't see. So don't think this is the first time they were called. Oh, by the way, are some of the names, Elitzur and Shlumiel, come help us with the census, come help us with the counting. Elitzur and Shlumiel had been called before in Sefer Shemos, in Sefer Vayikra, for all types of tasks that we don't see in the storyline. And now, they had already been called, so they were called again by the Eda for this mission. One of the traits of leadership, and leadership, as I keep telling you, doesn't have to be you had an organization, or you had a shul, or you had a community. Leadership is just inspiring people to better behavior, to better religious behavior. It could be your family, it could be people in your surroundings. People say the word leadership is immediately they go to headlines and politics and communal services. It could just be being a leader in your own private life. Is you don't get to pick and choose. You don't get to say this is the project I want, this is the project I don't want. A leader is someone that's l'chol davar, that you have parts of your responsibilities that you like and you enjoy, and parts of your responsibility you don't really like. But you don't check out, and you don't dismiss yourself because you're not excited about something in a family. Being a father is being available, emotionally available, physically available, all the time, for all the responsibilities of fatherhood. Not just cherry-picking and selecting the parts you want, the parts you like, the parts you don't like. So Rashi is saying they had already been called. Don't think they just woke up, wow, this is great, a census, we get to count people, we get to be written about as part of this machana to determine. You know, they were there taking out the garbage 10 minutes ago. You just didn't see them. They were there handling internal strife in the community 10 minutes ago. You just didn't see them. Hanikroim l'chol davar. And they'll be called later, I'm sure, on Sefer Vayikra, where you won't see them. This is just their 15 minutes of fame. This is just the spotlight, what's exciting. But don't think that it's just cherry pick this moment of opportunity and responsibility. Being a Keruoi Ha'eda means being called l'chol davar. Not just for the parts that you like and the areas that you're attracted to. Okay. So how did they know who belonged to which family? So the Torah writes, Vayis Yaldu al Mishpichosam. It's a very interesting verb, Vayis Yaldu. Vayis Yaldu. You can't force yourself to be born. Vayis Yaldu al Mishpichosam. Just think about that word for a moment. How would you interpret that word, Vayis Yaldu? So you would say it's poetic, that they became associated to their families, but it would be a strange word. It's a reflexive, poetic word. Rashi believes the word isn't just poetic and metaphoric, but there's a way for me to be born into my family. How can I choose my family? How can I be born into my family? Not that. They brought scrolls that proved their pedigree. Rashi says, Heviu sifrei yichusehem, v'cheskas leidasam, kol echad v'echad l'hisyaches al hashevet. They each brought their birth certificates and their parents' marriage license, and they showed, I'm pedigreed, I'm a real Jew. My mother, she's Jewish. She married my father. She didn't intermarry. And I belong to the Shevet. So they were active in affiliating themselves with a particular Shevet by producing the documentation to whoever was counting that they belong. Now, this is an amazing, but in many ways, a portentous moment in Jewish history. It's an amazing moment in Jewish history because when people are enslaved, and there are many layers to slavery, there's physical slavery, there's social, psychological, socioeconomic slavery, but when people are under pressure and duress, family structures tend to crumble. Keeping a family together takes a lot, as you'll see, takes a lot of resources and a lot of inner strength and a lot of inner calm. And once you exert this outside pressure, and whether it's slavery or other forms of pressure, families start to crumble. Sadly, look at some of the communities across the world. And this isn't a racist comment. This is the most sympathetic comment possible. Some races and ethnicities are better at maintaining family structures. Some are worse, and it really devours the communal structure. It really leads to multi-generational cycles of poverty and of under-education and of crime and of socioeconomic disadvantage. And the sooner you can solve it, the better. No one is blaming anyone, but it's just the state that we're in. So it's hard when you are caught in these cycles of socioeconomic slavery and torment. And yet, the Jewish people in Mitzrayim, at least those that left, it's always interesting to me to think about, maybe if you take Chazal literally, that 80% of the Jews didn't leave Mitzrayim, only 20% left Mitzrayim, were those 80% who didn't leave those who had intermarried, because they really weren't pedigree Jewish, whereas the 20% who left kept their yichus intact. But here you see an amazing heroic stand, and under all that pressure, and not being able to control your living habits, and not being able to control your schedule, not being able to control your family, not being able to control your own body, because you're chattel, you belong to your master. Somehow the Jewish people kept their yichus intact. And this is a celebration of all that heroism in Mitzrayim. That's why the Torah makes a big deal about it. Remember, Bar Midbar is supposed to be a minute before entering Eretz Yisrael. Had Shlach not occurred, then this would have been the entry point to Eretz Yisrael. Let's count the people, let's start marching to Eretz Yisrael, and then they go in. Baloscha and Shlach derail the whole process. But there isn't meant to be a long-winded process. In theory, it's not meant to be five Sifrei Torah, but in theory, historically, chronologically, it should end in a few parshios. So as they're walking into Eretz Yisrael, they're maintaining their yichus, and they're producing actual documentation, which is amazing to believe. We even get paper in those days. How did slaves get paper? Then Megillas Yochsin. And I say it's portentous because, unfortunately, this has always remained a Jewish struggle. And it's fascinating, Parshas Bamidbar, because Parshas Bamidbar is about Jewish population. And sadly, Jewish population has never really skyrocketed. It's always been, I think they say that in the days of the Churban Beis HaMikdash, there were about 1.1 million Jews, something like that. That's when the Jews left after the Roman destruction. You know how many Jews there were in 1700? 1.1 million Jews. Now, of course, at that point, population began to skyrocket, in part parallel to the skyrocketing population in the general world population. In the 18th, 19th, 20th century, is when all of a sudden you have these mega population sprawls because of all sorts of changes, hygiene and better medical care and better living conditions. But to a degree, Jewish population has always remained small, for all sorts of reasons, but probably the biggest reason is intermarriage. Because, again, these are things that are hard to chart. Baruch Hashem, we live in very, very insular cocoons, so most of us don't really encounter intermarriage, but the intermarriage rates today in America are probably close to 50%, if not more. Which means that one out of every two Jews, again, it depends who marries whom. If a man marries a woman, they're still legally Jewish. If a woman marries a man, then the baby's no longer legally Jewish. But essentially, let's say 40% of our people, so as much as we're trying to replenish ourselves by having children, if 40% are walking out of our people, population is going to be in many ways diminished. And this is one of the great tolls of Gullus, one of the great tolls of living. When you talk about the unspoken killer of Jewish identity in Gullus, you talk about pogroms and anti-Semitism and hatred, but the unspoken killer, the quiet virus, the quiet killer, is assimilation. You just live with people at some point. At some point, you're going to marry them, and at some point, it's going to be very, I'm not proving it, obviously, but at some point, it's going to happen. And it happened in Bavel, and in Bavel, it was much worse. When Ezra comes back, He's fighting a vicious battle against foreign wives, and it's not like they're multiple wives, Jewish wives and foreign wives, and he's battling them, and he doesn't succeed, and that's the fourth parak of Kiddushin. Asar Yochsin Olam Mibavel. There were 10 different, and when Ezra crossed the river, he wasn't dealing with the irony is the pedigree Jew stayed in Bavel because it was too comfortable. So he came with a lot of riffraff, a ragtag bunch of mamzerim and nesinim and half Jews, and so, and that's why keeping pedigree in Israel is so important, because it's a toll of galus. And now that we're coming back to Eretz Yisrael, not just practically, but symbolically. Not just practically, so that if you make Aliyah one day, your great-great-grandchild can marry my great-great-grandchild without having to worry about whether their pedigree. It's necessary practically, it also gets all chaotic. But it's also iconic, because this was part of our struggle in galus, to maintain our pedigree. And we didn't always succeed. Now that we're coming back to Eretz Yisrael, to just release any regulation of marriage, right? We're not in favor of religious coercion. We feel that religious coercion will backfire, will boomerang. So we want to try to be as soft-pedaled as possible about not legislating religion for secular Israelis. But there are three or four areas which we have to maintain the halachic regulations. One is marriage and conversion, to maintain the pedigree. One is kashrus, because we want there to be easily available kashrus. We look at what happens in America, where you have to spend inordinate sums for your foods. And Shabbos and Yom Tov, because we feel Shabbos and Yom Tov is so central to national identity. Those are the three sectors that we want to, again, we're not going to walk into people's houses and check what they're eating. We walk into people's houses and put in the public commons, in the public area. We want Shabbos and Yom Tov to maintain. We want kashrus to maintain. We want family, conversion, and marriage. Those are the three areas that, even if you're opposed to religious conversion, coercion, those have to be strictly maintained because they have iconic value. So it's an amazing pasuk. You may read past it and not pay attention, but you see, I'll do all mishpachosam. Okay, you guys have shir in the morning or in the end of Seder? You don't know. In the afternoon. Okay, I'll stop here. I want to talk about another Rashi case.